It's before 8 o'clock. I'm Lisa Lacco. This is The Great Northwest here on CBC at Radio 1, 88.3 in Thunder Bay, in Pickle Lake, 105.1 FM. Well, clean, clear water, I guess, is something that most of us take for granted in northwestern Ontario. But last year's disaster in Walkerton brought home the reality of what can happen when a water source becomes contaminated. For one-fifth of the world's people, a disaster like Walkerton is a day-to-day possibility. Every 8 seconds, a child dies from drinking contaminated water. Now, it's this sobering reality that's led two Thunder Bay men to try and take some action. Glenn Strongs and Jim Garrels are the co-founders of a group called Life Water Canada. Join me in the studio this morning. Good morning to you both.
Good morning, Lisa.
Okay, so, Jim, let me ask you first of all, what is Life Water?
Life Water is based in Thunder Bay here, and it's a non-profit group, and everyone who works with it is a volunteer. There's just a handful of volunteers here in Thunder Bay, and then there's several hundred people across the country, and they provide the $30,000 a year we need to drill wells. And there's 6 people that we've trained in Africa who do drilling full-time. And then I would say that Life Water includes every man, woman, and child in a village that gets clean water, and that's where it ends.
Okay, so how did all this start, Glenn?
Well, Jim is a hydrogeologist, works for the Ministry of Environment, and he was reading a trade magazine, and they were asking for well drillers, hydrogeologists to help in foreign countries. Jim first started in California with a group there called Life Water International. He did one trip with them, and then the following year he went back to California and he met a man from Liberia who had a vision for his country, that he needed someone to come and help. And when Jim came back to Canada, started to put together a project, he realized that he needed some people to help him, but also he realized that we had to incorporate into Canada so that we could provide tax relief for people that are donating money. So he contacted me because I have a background in education, and he said that people that drill wells and hydrogeologists are really keen when they get out in the field, and they like to drill wells, and they don't have that ability to teach someone else how to do it. So if you give,
I don't think I said that,
or something like that.
Something like that. But if you give a well driller a machine to put holes in the ground, then he just goes for it. He just loves to drill the wells. But our vision was to leave the well drilling equipment in Liberia, give them the skills to drill the wells themselves, and that way we needed to teach. And so we put together a package that we could teach people from overseas as simply as we could to drill their own wells.
Okay, so Jim, what appealed to you about this? I mean, I'm trying to imagine that first trip for you. What was that like?
Well, the first trip I ever took was to Kenya, and the second trip was to Liberia, and that was with Glenn. And that was really unforgettable, from going to a downtown area, which is much like Thunder Bay, and overnight the rebels attacked, and they lost their power, they lost their water, they lost their sewage. And if you can imagine waking up tomorrow morning, or this morning, here in Thunder Bay, you turn on your tap and there's no water. What do you do? And in Liberia, they can't go to Lake Superior because that's the ocean and it's salt. And that's when people started to drink out of swamps, they were drinking out of ditches, they were digging holes in their yards. And that's where we came, and we were drilling wells right on major intersections of streets, downtown, that type of environment. But it's not like Thunder Bay, it's 100 degrees, 100% humidity. And bullet holes above our bed. In 96, the last day we were drilling, we could hear shelling in the distance, so it was a very, very different environment. And especially for Glenn, this was his first time out of Thunder Bay, and he ended up with an AK-47 up his nose and being interrogated in front of a rebel general. And
what was that like, Glenn?
Oh, it was terrifying. I said I would never do it again. And then in 97, I went again. But it was terrifying. It's the airports, that's what I found the worst. Just the interrogation. The people with guns, just on and on, asking, like, you know, what are you doing here? What are you doing here? And they can't believe that you're there to, I'm here to help. In Liberia, all the NGO, the non-government organizations, had left because of the civil war. And then here we were, maybe a bit naive, coming into the country saying, well, we're here to help. And it was like, no, they just didn't understand that. It's like, that's you know, there's something else going on. And we kept being interrogated. We were stopped on the streets at military roadblocks. And after a while, it was like, no, we're here with LifeWater. And even the people go, oh, okay, well, carry on.
But, you know, the reason Glenn went back and the reason we're still planning to go back again for yet another trip is, when it boils down to it, it's going into these villages and seeing these kids. And we know that if we don't put a well in that village, by the time we come back next year, some of those kids will be dead. And then you see these people and they are trying. That's the expression in Liberia. We're trying. That means we're working hard, but it ain't going well. And part of the reason is that these folks are incredibly poor. We went to one village called Bentown, and the elders met with us, and we said, your women need to haul water for the drill rig all day long. They said, no problem. We said, your men need to haul gravel to the site and guard the machine all night. If anything goes missing, we're out of here. They said, no problem. And then we said, and we need you to provide meals for the five guys on the drill team for the 3 days they're here. And they said, if we need to provide food for five extra people for 3 days, we can't have a well. They had so little to go on. And that's why we are here trying to raise funds for these people. That's why we're going back there. Like, these people really are doing their best, but they've got nothing. Half the country's population was displaced. Now they're coming back to try to rebuild their villages, and they really need our help.
Okay, so how much are you trying to raise?
We raise about $30,000 a year to provide 10 wells, which is it's quite a bargain, really. But we do the work ourselves. The Liberians that work for us, they pretty much work as volunteers themselves. So we try to give them a bit of a stipend every time, but a lot of the money that we give them just goes back into the ground. So $30,000 a year, that's what we tried to raise. Last year we raised a little bit more so that we could drill 13 wells instead of 10. So we try to get 10 a year. So what we're trying to do is challenge people in Thunder Bay to maybe forego a meal once and send the money to us. Or if we could get 100 families to say, instead of going out to a restaurant once, to say, well, we can send $10, we can send $30, 100 times 30, that's $3,000, that's enough for another well. And so we're just challenging the people from Thunder Bay to think about the clean water when they turn on the tap this morning, and, you know, realize that there's a lot of people out there that don't have, you know, these bare necessities. And well, if they can get in touch with us, and we can certainly put the money to use.
You know, that was one of the hardest moments we had a couple of years ago, when we had to contact the drill team and tell them to stop drilling because we didn't have enough funds. And that's why our hope is, if we could get 100 people to send in the equivalent of a restaurant meal before Christmas, we can put in another well in another village. And that's pretty exciting. You know, it makes a difference one well at a time. And but for the village that we went and looked at, the one with swamp water, when they get a well, if I could just read a little clip, we get thank you letters every time a well is drilled from the villagers. And they're short, and the English is often broken grammar, but it comes from the heart. And it reads like this here. Dear Director Sir, we the people that live in Bloja Town give you many thanks for giving us hand pump in our town. We and our children was suffering for good drinking water. Last year, 4 babies died from running stomach. Many thanks.
I can certainly see why it's important. Why is it so important for you, Glenn?
Well, we've often, we talk about this question, what keeps us going, and we can get into some real philosophical reasons, but there's kind of three things that keep us going. One is that kind of on a spiritual level, it's love your neighbors, and who is your neighbor. There's moral reasons, saying that you know, that every life is equal. Like, we live in a global society. But since September 11th, like, you know, we're starting to see that there's, like, you know, really logical reasons why we need to do something about the difference between the rich and the poor in this world, and that we need to be helping one another. Countries need to be helping countries. We need to, when people are desperate, people that are rich need to help out. And that's partly why we keep on going, that because the need is there.
You know, Lisa, when you started the show, you made reference to the tragedy in Walkerton. And what most people don't realize is a tragedy like that happens almost every day in Liberia. The last time we were there, over 100 people died from cholera right in the capital city itself. And the conditions in outlying villages are even worse. And I think for us, part of the reason that we do it is when we see what these folks that we meet live with and put up with, we are so incredibly blessed. And we're very humbled by the spirit of the folks that we are having the privilege of working with. And I think above all, we can't forget the kids that we see walking around, having to haul the water on their head, and the water is often so foul that here in Thunder Bay, we wouldn't let our own kids play in it even. It's 1 foot deep, black, swampy water, and that's their only source of non-salt water for drinking. And there's another village like that, and another village like that, and that's what keeps us going.
You drill a hole in the ground, and you put in a hand pump, and it makes all the difference.
Oh, we met a doctor in California. He said that what we're doing in Liberia, each well does more than his lifetime of practice for saving people. That's how bad the water is there, that just one well can make so much difference for those people.
We had supper with two doctors in Liberia at one of the clinic. They were volunteers there and totally worn out. And they said, if you guys can come and put a well in the nearby village, that'll cut our workload in half. Because they're dealing with typhoid, dysentery, cholera, these basic preventable diseases.
And I'm guessing Liberia is just, I mean, there are so many Liberias around the world, and so many small towns like the ones you were talking about within that country. I mean, it's
oh, definitely. We've been to Ghana. We've trained some people in Ghana. We've been invited to go to Angola to help people there. That's just in Africa. There's Central America is full of these little towns as well. So there are a lot of organizations like LifeWater that are putting in wells. Sometimes when there's a crisis, you have teams go in to put in wells, and they don't spend a lot of time with the local people. It's like because there's so much need, they put a well in, they move on. And the difference with LifeWater, at least we think so, is that we're trying to empower the local people to do it themselves, so that they get that joy, but they also get the confidence to move on to another town themselves. So,
you know, if we started thinking about all the wells that are required to solve the problem of lack of safe drinking water around the world, we would become immobilized. The problem is so huge and overwhelming. And we keep coming back to the image of a father and his son walking along the beach, and it's full of starfish that have been washed up on the beach, and they're lying there dying. And every 10, 20 steps, the boy picks up a starfish and throws it back in the water. And then they walk past a few thousand, and he throws another one back. And at one point, the dad says, "You know, son, why do you do that? There's so many. What difference does it make?" And the boy says to his dad, "Yeah, you know what, Dad? It makes a difference to the one I throw back. And that's the only way we can get our mind around this problem. We're going to do it one village at a time, and we know it makes a difference to that village, and then to the next one, and then to the next."
So it's based here in Thunder Bay, put together by you two. How can people get in touch and help?
We have our phone numbers. You can call us at home. With Jim's phone number is 622-4848. I can be called at home at 473-9263. You can also visit our website, www.lifewater.ca, and you'll find our phone numbers there as well. We have a fax number, phone number, email addresses are there. Our mailing address is Post Office Box 44, Kakabeka Falls, and that's where we collect all our mail. So people can send checks to LifeWater, LifeWater Canada, and we make sure they end up in the right place.
And a few more wells hopefully drilled this year.
Well, and it would be really encouraging and exciting for us and for the team over there too, if 100 families would take the challenge to donate a restaurant meal equivalent.
Thank you so much for coming in this morning, and I'm quite moved by the work that you're doing. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Been speaking with Glenn Strongs and Jim Garrels, the co-founders of Lifewater Canada. Now again, that website, www.lifewater.ca. Telephone numbers 622-4848 or 473-9263. We're coming up now to 2 minutes.